This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu, and it's Resource Center and also Her Vantage. And this is a show where we speak to women of influence and leadership from sports, the arts, business, the works. This week, we speak to Amy Cox Blair from the Batik Boutique, who has been on the station before. And this is a social enterprise that enables women to provide for their household. That's putting it very mildly. Welcome back, Amy. And, you know, you have to do this again. You'll have to tell us the genesis of your story in the beginning.
Well, thanks for having me, Frida. In the beginning, I moved to Malaysia 8 years ago, had a background in tourism. Around 5 years ago, I was living in Kuala Lumpur, and I met a local woman named Kak Anna. Kak Anna came to my house and began to discuss with me how she could work with me. So she began babysitting my children and also teaching me Bahasa Melayu. And along the way, I began to hear her journey and her story of being a single mother living in this culture. My heart really went out to her, and I began wondering what is a sustainable way that we could help her actually create a living for herself. Mm-hmm. So we began dialoguing, you know, could she make kuay? Could she clean houses? What could she do? And that's when I discovered that she had a sewing machine. Mm-hmm. And I have a background in tourism. One of the things I realized from living and working in Malaysia was that we have really great artisans and artwork and talent with batik and songket and weaving. But there's a disconnect with getting that to the tourism industry. So I had an idea. Maybe Kak Anna could make products for me to take back to the U.S. Mm. Long story short, when I took the products back, people loved it. They loved the colors. They loved the patterns. They had never seen batik. But more so, they loved the story that these products were actually helping a single mom. So okay. That's how we got started.
So you accidentally got into business.
Yes.
Right. So it's been 6 years since you started. So what have been some, you know, learnings for you in the last 6 years?
The main lesson I continue to learn is that of perseverance. When we live in a day and age where we have information available at our fingertips, it's even more difficult when something doesn't meet our expectations or a project doesn't go the way that we expect it should be. Mm. So perseverance has been my theme since living in Malaysia. I think adjusting to a foreign culture, learning how to do business here, and I'm a much better person for it. I think anytime you have to believe for something, you have to fight for something, you have to wait for something, It just defines our character and it makes us a much better person.
I guess when you started, little did you know that you'd be involved in a social enterprise, so to speak. Now, how many women do you have working with you now?
At any given time, depending on the project and the workload we have access to around 50 different artisans. Most of those are women.
Okay. And do they come with the skills or do you have to train them?
Both. Okay. Part of what we do in a social enterprise, we're not just trying to provide work for them, but we're also trying to provide training. So we've developed a few sewing centers and different groups. We've identified groups of people who, some of who have training already, and they can sew and begin production and immediately start earning income, and others of whom have identified as that they would want to earn income. Right. And so we will offer training for them to help them be able to reach production.
Okay, these sewing centers, how many of these sewing centers do you have?
We have one that we started in January that's officially ours. Mm-hmm. And then we work with about three others currently right now that were already existing.
Okay, so with these women, so they're not employees, but they're commissioned to work with you.
Yes, I found in Malaysia, everyone loves to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
it's difficult with the women in their life stage, with the fact that they might not have transportation or small children. It's difficult for them to come to work in a set time. And so we found when we can empower them to have some ownership and to be more of an entrepreneur for themselves, that right. That works better.
You know, that's really good. I mean, the whole idea. But is it easy to get a commitment? This is the whole idea about entrepreneurship and ownership. But, you know, it means different things to different people. So is it easy to get commitment to what you want to do?
Well, it's easy to get interest, I would say, in what we want to do. When we go to a flat or an area of town and we offer our idea for training and how it can help people, everyone's excited about it. They show up, obviously, for the first couple of times and even for the training. But when it gets to the point of helping them move from training to income producing, to meeting deadlines, to quality control, that's when we begin to have issues. So we just keep doing it. We're like a revolving door at some point. When someone wants the opportunity, it's there for them. And there are other people that you know, we'll do the training, we'll learn something, and we'll go on and maybe be able to make a baju or something, you know, right, for their own family.
It, does that help out with your production? How do you sort out production when you, you know, like you say, it's a revolving door? How do you ensure that you have enough so that things still can get done?
Yes, that's our biggest, issue. We have some really good seamstresses who've worked for us for a long time, and so we tend to use them as trainers. And they will be the ones as well to oversee our production. So because we have access to so many people, we just keep production going all the time.
Right.
So when something's not sewn correctly, we send it back and they can work on it. But yet we're still able to meet the demands for the orders that we have.
Okay. So a lot of the work that you do, apart from them doing work, is also even just training them. For those who are interested to do it, but they don't have the skills, you actually spend some time training them.
Yes, we do. And we also, we start with a financial literacy program with them.
Right.
Because we realize that a lot of women and people in just low-income situations, they've never been taught how to balance their money. They've never been taught.
It starts with that.
Yeah, we have to start there with how to have a budget. Even they don't even know sometimes what are their monthly expenses. So we start with how much income do you already have coming in? How much output do you have going out? You know, what are your expenses?
Okay.
And then we help them to have a budget. We help them to talk about marketing and how not to end up buying a refrigerator for 6,000 ringgit later when you saw it was zero down and things like that. And then the second step that we take them through is when they want to learn a skill and they want to start making income to meet their specific goals.
Right. So that wasn't part of the initial plan with Aina.
No, but I was naturally already doing that in our times together. So it just made sense.
And you find that the response has been good in terms of the turnaround and the understanding?
Yeah, it's been good.
Okay, so and what have been some of the new product offerings that you've introduced?
In the last several years, we've expanded to more fashion. We've done silk shawls, cotton scarves. We've started producing our own handmade clutches. And we're also experimenting a bit with eco-friendly dyes that we're making in-house.
All right. I'm here with Amy Cox-Blair from the Batik Boutique in her Vantage. We'll continue our chat with her after this. It's Resource Centre, BFM 89.9. It's Resource Centre and it's also her Vantage where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Amy Cox-Blair from the Batik Boutique. And what they do is they started off with purses and little things made from batik. And of course, it's expanded to a lot of other things as well. And of course, what you do is a social enterprise. In terms of marketing and trademarking your product, is that something that you've done already?
Well, we're starting to produce our own blocks.
Yeah.
I think in any of this, I have goals and expectations, but I have to be realistic at the time. So we are producing our own blocks. We customize our own colors. And, you know, we're on a journey still to define ourselves. I don't think we've not really been on the journey very long yet. So I think we're still growing in who are we, what is our signature look. But along the way, in the next year or two, I think we're getting there.
Right.
And we will eventually start trademarking our designs and patterns.
Okay, what do you see yourself in 1 or 2 years' time? How do you see the Batik Boutique evolving?
In 1 to 2 years' time, I think we will continue producing for this U.S.-based company that we started producing for. I think we will move somewhat into service industry as well, because many people want to know what is batik. We've got tourism still as an important source of income in Malaysia. So we will start teaching batik classes, both at a corporate level as well as just a personal level, where you can become your own designer of your own clutch and you can, or your scarf or whatever. Also, we will expand into corporate even more.
Okay. So I know you took part in an event recently where the PM, the Prime Minister, saw your product. What was that event all about?
Yeah, that was one of the highlights of our business so far. MAGIC is an organization set aside by the government who is focusing on social entrepreneurs. And they hosted an event based on a plan that they came out with. It was the plan for the social entrepreneurship for Malaysia. So the PM was invited to that. And we were fortunate enough to be one of the social enterprises they invited to meet the PM and to show him some of the products that we make. So he came by and spoke to me a few minutes and asked me about the impact we were having and that it was a good thing that we were promoting batik. And so it was a really good opportunity for us.
So did MAGIC discover you?
I discovered MAGIC.
Okay.
I had no idea. It's because social entrepreneurship and social enterprises are a new concept here in Malaysia. I think we've already been doing that for several years, but didn't have the terms around it. And so when I discovered, okay, wait, there's this whole like section that is just allotted to help social enterprises expand, I went to them and just said, hey, what can we do? And they had not heard of us. And yeah. So it was a really good match.
Okay. So you was talking about some tie-ups with some online stores in the U.S. So what's happening there and who are you working with?
Yes, we have a distributor in Texas who ships our products in the U.S. when someone purchases online. And then we sell with a few other fair trade companies or companies who focus on socially produced products.
Etsy,
we have, but we've not. That's not been a big part of our sales so far. There are other fair trade companies who buy wholesale from countries like ours. And so we partner with them. We do some drop shipping as well. But the biggest development we've had is in the last year and a half, we've been working with a company called Raven and Lily. And they're an amazing company based in the U.S. They focus on both eco-friendly and socially produced products. We started a conversation with them about a year ago to see if there was a way that they could take our group on to design for them. So they work with artisan groups. That's the terminology, artisan groups.
Yes.
And Malaysia in our group has become one of their artisan groups. So in the fall, their lookbook will come out for their fall-winter collection, and there are several products, a kimono and a few scarves that are eco-friendly that we have produced for them.
Right.
And it will actually say the Malaysia collection under them. So they sell to over 100 stores in the U.S., and they have a really good following in that industry there and celebrities who wear their clothes. So we think it's a really good opportunity.
With your business, is the market largely overseas?
I think the awareness is still largely overseas for what we're doing, that we're impacting community, that we're producing handmade products. So the interest there is still higher than it is here. But we are starting to see in the corporate realm, people in CSR, it helps with things like magic and this concept of social enterprise. I think it's starting here. And so we're still really focused. Our main source of income and the main source of how we employ people is corporate orders.
And you were saying that that's still a focus for you, corporate orders and, you know, working with hotels. Is that still very much, you know, something that you're actively pursuing?
Yes, for sure. It's our bread and butter. The more women we can provide work and projects for, the more women that you know, we can hire and train and it impacts their life. And so that only happens when you have production in bulk and in high quantity. So that will always be a focus of ours.
In terms of the products availability in stores locally, where can people find your products?
You can find our products in several places in Kuala Lumpur, at the National Textile Museum, at the Petronas Towers gift shop, at Bongsar Village at Sundays, at Allison's Place in Damansara Heights, and most recently in Senway Pyramids under the Good Shop.
Oh, okay, so these are the places. Now, one of the things that you've also discovered, which was very interesting, was this thing with mangosteen leaves. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we had a company, Raven and Lily, who were interested in doing eco-friendly, and we had no idea where to start. So we began asking our different batik artists, have you ever made any eco-friendly dye? How did that go? And we found one man who was actually playing around with different leaves, and he grew up in a village and just lots of trees. So when his friends and him were bored, they would go and just try to make dyes from what they found. They discovered a really beautiful dye from the leaf of mangosteen, and he actually has then taught us how to do it, and we're producing it with our own artist here in Kuala Lumpur and for production to send to
Raven
and Lily.
And right now it's available with your silk clutches.
Yes, we do it on our silk clutches as well.
Yeah, and it's amazing because it's something, you know, when we eat the mangosteen, it stains our hands. And now to, you know, to put it into a product, you know, it's quite an interesting idea. So do you find that then because of what you're trying to do, that it's not easy to expand because it's so people dependent? It goes back to what your cause is, right? Is there a way around this, do you think?
Well, people are the most beautiful part of our business, and yes, the reason we started, and people are the most frustrating part of our business as well. So we just keep, I mean, we just keep offering opportunity, we keep training. I realized along the way there would be some wastage in our fabrics and our, you know, overhead costs that I had not allotted for, so I've had to adjust to the fact that along the way for training, there will just, and even in our production, there will just be things that won't go. So how will I adjust to that? Because we have seen people who've come in who we've seen their life starting to change, and we've seen the smiles on their face, and we've seen that their children have enough food to eat now and that they can send them to school and things that all of us should have as human beings. We've started seeing that happen. And so that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me motivated to keep offering this opportunity to other people.
All right. So is wastage what keeps you awake at night?
a little bit, quality control, wastage, what I could make from a different batik design, you know, if I'm doing a good thing, if this is really making an impact, if it's really worth it, things right. like that, yeah.
So in the near future from Batik Boutique, we're seeing things happening in fall, as you would say. Is that what we'll be able to see online as well?
Yes, we're actually doing a rebrand right now and doing a new website. So by the time fall comes out, we'll have a more signature collection that will be both available here in Malaysia as well as overseas.
Fall would be September for us.
Fall would be September. I have to remember that. Yes, September.
So check out thebatikboutique.com for the products that they have. I've been speaking to Amy Cox-Blair from The Batik Boutique. It's Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.